Fletcher took another step. No. Gibson was my friend. I brought him in. Do I need to say any more? Paris looked away. She shook her head. She got the picture. If Gibson was a Fed and Fletcher had brought him in, then the ultimate screw-up lay at Fletcher's door. And that was something he would never accept, just like he'd never admit he'd gotten his ass kicked. Fletcher said, "Good. Now this is an emergency. There's no doubt about that. The only question is, level one or level two?" The different levels of emergency had been laid down long ago. One was measured in minutes. It meant drop everything and run. Two was measured in hours. It meant tie up loose ends, grab what you can, and run. Vidich shuffled nearer to the front of the couch cushion. He said, "Level two, for sure. The feds needed to send a guy in undercover, which shows they were fishing. They didn't have anything solid to justify an immediate bust. They still don't. The stranger was unconscious when you brought him to the house, and groggy when he somehow got out. He certainly didn't have time to search the place, and he didn't come here." Good points. So, what do we do? You have a van here, so clearly you're ready to load up, fold the tents, which I agree with, but we should give ourselves 24 hours. Do the Russian job. Take what's already arrived. Forget the final delivery. Split directly from there. Paris said, "Works for me." "Kane?" Kane grunted. "We can't leave without doing the Russian thing. I don't care what is there and what isn't. We need to teach them a lesson. That's the priority." Fletcher nodded. "Good. We pack up here. We do the Russian job. But that's not all." Paris said, "What else is left?" "Two other houses. Some Russians own those as well." "You're not suggesting I am. We take all three." "It's not justified. We don't know if anything's there. Whoever bought them might not be using them yet. So we'll spend time, maybe for nothing. And we've done no surveillance, which means it's dangerous. There could be booby traps, guards even." Fletcher nodded again. "Fair points. We might waste time. We might face opposition. But there's a way to mitigate those risks. When Bowery disappeared, I called in reinforcements. I was worried someone was moving in on us. That's moot now. So we use the extra manpower to help with the additional properties and to help find the stranger." Vidich threw up his hands in an exaggerated shrug. "Wait a minute. Reinforcements? You should have told us. Who are they? How do we know if we can trust them? When will they get here?" Fletcher said, "Sometimes decisions have to be made on the fly. It's called leadership. I brought in four guys, all vouched for by Kane. He's worked with them before. And they're already here. They arrived this evening."
"Arrived where?"
"That weird motel by the highway. They can stay there till they're needed." "This is a mistake. You should have enough. It's done. Accept it. Okay?" Vidich shrugged. "Good. Next, we need a new schedule. How long to get this place packed up?" Kane scratched his armpit. "Couple of hours, max." Fletcher nodded. "Then we'll sleep now. Pack up in the morning when we have more light. Everything except for the industrial metals. They're too dangerous to transport, too hard to sell. We'll hit the first Russian place at noon, followed by the other two. Then we'll split. Paris said, "What time do you want us back?"
"Back? No, we're not leaving. We'll sleep here."
"All of us?" She couldn't help shooting a scowl at Kane.
"All of us."
"Okay. And we clear our house when? After we're done here?"
"No. We don't go back to our house. None of us. Assume it's blown."
"But I need to get something."
"What?"
Paris was silent for a moment.
"My books."
"You can buy new books. I want my old books. They have sentimental value." "The answer is no. It's too dangerous. Any other questions?"
Vidic cleared his throat.
"This is a delicate one. Speaking of the house, Gibson's body is there. Aren't we going to retrieve it? Give him a proper funeral or something?"
"We're not going to retrieve his body. Too much risk, too little reward. Assume the house is under surveillance 24/7 from now on. But we are going to give him a funeral. A Viking funeral. The moment we're finished with the Russians, I'll light the house up like a pyre. We'll say goodbye to Gibson. Destroy everything that could come back and bite us, and create a diversion while we split. A perfect triple play."
"How can you light the house on fire if you can't go near it?"
"I don't need to go near it."
Fletcher pulled out his phone and held it up.
"Smart switches. Tap a couple of buttons. The deep fat fryer overheats. The dryer malfunctions. A table light short circuits.
A home arson app. Who knew? It was only a matter of time, I guess. We could license it, make a fortune."
"Already been done. Some guy out of Pensacola, Florida."
Fletcher paused.
"Anything else?"
"Just one thing."
Vidic swiveled and pointed at the safe. "You said pack everything up apart from the medals."
"That too?"
"What's inside it, sure. We'll split it five ways. Gibson had a kid. She'll get his share."
"That's fair, I guess.
But we'll do that last, after the Russian thing's a wrap."
"What if something happens to you?"
"No one else knows the combination."
A smile crept across Fletcher's face.
"Guess you better take care that nothing does happen to me.
I know how you'd hate to lose all that cash."
Chapter 13. Reacher slept, but lightly. Part of his subconscious remained active, on the alert for the slightest sign that somebody was trying to pick the lock or tamper with the bathroom window. He was disturbed at one point by noises from room 19 next door. Someone must have checked in while he was at the diner. He listened for 5 minutes, then dismissed the threat. It was just aimless voices, a couple of guys settling in for the night. Then he was woken finally a minute after 6 a.m. by a knock at the door. It was loud and confident, and it was followed by a woman's voice. It said, "Mr. Austin, room service. I have your breakfast." Reacher pulled the Glock out from beneath the pillow, stood up, and tucked it into his waistband. He rolled up the pillow to make it more rigid and carried it to the door. He moved to the right-hand side and lifted the pillow until the top was covering the peephole, in case someone was standing on the other side with a gun, waiting to pull the trigger when the little lens went dark. A second crawled by. Two. There was no gunshot. No shattered wood or shredded fabric. Reacher risked a quick glance. He saw a woman. She was slim, maybe 5'8". She had dark brown hair tied back away from her face, and she was wearing an apron over her clothes. It was the kind he had seen the waitresses wearing at the diner the day before, but with no name tag. The woman was carrying a rectangular tray with a coffee mug on it, alongside a plate that was covered with a silver metal lid. But she was only supporting the tray with one hand, her left. Her right arm was tucked in tight against her side, and her hand was hidden behind her thigh. Reacher said, "I didn't order any breakfast." The woman said, "You did. Kind of. You told Hannah May that you would be coming in, but she's gone off shift now. She asked me to take care of you. She's sweet on you for some reason. So I thought I'd go the extra mile. Bring your food to your room." "What did you bring me?" "Coffee, obviously. She told me you like it. Only one mug, but I can get you a refill anytime. Plus, I got bacon, eggs, and some toast." Reacher assumed that this was the next step in the attempt to lure him outside. He guessed a couple of guys, minimum, would be waiting, hidden from view on either side of the doorway. He decided to test the theory. He said, "Okay, sounds great. Bring it in." Reacher started to open the door. He moved it slowly, and when it was two-thirds of the way through its arc, he heard the clink of crockery on the other side. He slammed the door back the other way. He put all his weight behind it. The leading edge smashed into the tray, then the woman, then it crashed into its frame. The wood shuddered, the handle rattled. Reacher pulled the door open again. He did it fast this time. He saw the woman on the ground, sprawled on her back. A gun was lying 4 feet from her head. The mug had shattered. Brown liquid was pooling on the ground. The plate had landed upside down. But there was no sign of any other people. Reacher grabbed the woman by her foot and dragged her into the room. Then he stepped past her, ducked down, leaned out, and scanned to the left and the right. There was still no sign of anyone lurking near his room. He retrieved the fallen gun, shut the door, and turned to check on the woman. She had moved. She was on her feet. Her arms were out in front, fingers extended like claws, and her body was taut, like a cat about to pounce on its prey. She said, "Found you at last, you son of a—" "Oh, you're not—" She dropped her arms and stepped back. Reacher waited for a moment, then said, "I'm not what?" The woman looked down at the floor. Then she raised her eyes to meet Reacher's and said, "You're not the man who killed my father." Vidic barely got any sleep. He lay awake on one of the couches in the cave for most of the night, cursing Reacher for not having a cell phone. He could have sent him a text silently, but he couldn't call. Not from inside. Not with Kane stretched out on another couch. And he couldn't risk going outside, even if he pretended to need the bathroom. Fletcher was there, spending the night in his Cadillac, maybe asleep, but maybe watching. Fletcher came back into the cave at 6:15. He slammed the door behind him and said, "Big day today. Who wants breakfast?" Kane stretched and said, "Me. I'll have a burrito." Vidic said, "Croissant, coffee." Fletcher said, "I want sausage and biscuits. Paris?" Paris shrugged. "I'm not very hungry. Maybe some yogurt, a little fruit." Fletcher grimaced. "Sounds gross. But hey, your funeral. You heard what everyone else wants." Paris nodded. "Good. Now go fetch. Be quick." Paris shot daggers at Fletcher, hauled herself off the couch, and made for the door. Vidic waited until she was out of sight, then jumped up and went after her. He looked at Fletcher as he hurried past and said, "Changed my mind. I want a pain au chocolat instead." The woman's gaze dropped to Reacher's motel room floor. She said, "This is really embarrassing. Clearly, I made a mistake. Now, if I could just get my weapon back, I'll leave you alone. I won't disturb you again." Reacher said, "I don't get it. Do I look like the man who killed your father?" "Like I told you, I made a mistake. This isn't on you. I should have checked you out more carefully. Did your father live around here?" "Look, assuming the ground won't open up and swallow me, which, believe me, I'm praying for right now, I just want to go. I'm mortified, and I'm wasting time. So please, give me my weapon. I'll get out of your hair. You'll never see me again." The woman held out her hand. Her fingers were trembling. Her eyes were red. She wasn't telling the whole story. Reacher was certain of that. But he didn't believe she was lying. And he didn't see her as a threat. He hit the catch to release the magazine from her gun, thumbed out the bullets and slipped them into his pocket, checked that the chamber was empty, reassembled the weapon, and handed it to her. He said, "The man who killed your father? I hope you find him." Vidich slipped between his Jeep and Paris's Land Rover and ducked down so that he wouldn't be visible from the cave's entrance. Paris had been about to start her engine, but instead she rolled down her window. She said, "What are you doing? Are you trying to get us caught?" Vidich said, "Don't move. Give me a minute. If Fletcher comes out, stall him. Cover for me." Vidich pulled out his phone and dialed the number for Reacher's motel. The call rang. And rang. Vidich pictured the clerk asleep in the back office. He imagined her waking up, stretching, remembering where she was, recognizing the ringing sound, then strolling to the reception counter like she was moving in slow motion. He was struggling to catch his breath. His heart was beating so hard he could hear it. Finally, the clerk picked up. Vidich asked for room 20. There was a pause, a click, some more ringing. Then Reacher's voice came on the line. Vidich said, "Reacher, listen, I've got to be quick. Two things. One, Fletcher's last job will be tomorrow morning, 4 a.m., so you and I are going to hit his stash this afternoon, maybe around 2 p.m. I'll call when I'm on my way to pick you up. Two, Fletcher has called in extra muscle. Four guys. Kane's buddies, so undoubtedly psychos. They've checked into your motel. They have your description, so it's even more important than ever that you keep the drapes closed and don't leave the room. Understood?" Why did Fletcher bring in these extra guys? Because of Gibson? Or what happened in the kitchen yesterday? Neither. When Bowery disappeared, Fletcher got twitchy. Turns out he was worried about getting jumped at the job tomorrow. He had Kane called him a couple of days ago. There was silence on the line for a moment. Then Reacher said, "What does Kane look like?"
"What?"
"Describe Kane."
"I don't have to describe him. He's big, scary looking, 6'6", 300 pounds, mad eyes, hair kind of like yours."
"What's his first name?"
"Zach."
"Why?" "No special reason."
"You forget it. I've got to go. You rest up. Be ready for this afternoon."
Reacher tucked the two guns into his waistband and left his room. This time he turned left, away from the motel office. He looped around the back of the building and continued for the full width of the diner so that when he emerged, he approached its door from the opposite direction. He stepped inside. The woman who had tried to trick her way into his room was sitting in the nearest seat, the one with the view of the first 19 motel rooms, just as he had expected. She was wearing black leather boots with low heels, jeans, a fitted black t-shirt, a tan leather jacket, and she had a small purse hanging from its shoulder strap across the back of her chair. Reacher took the seat facing hers. He said, "Zach Kane." The color drained from the woman's face. She said,
"Who?"
"Zach Kane killed your father."
"Who told you?"
"No one. I joined the dots."
"How?"
"Four guys checked into the hotel yesterday evening. They're Kane's associates. You followed them, hoping they'd lead you to him. You saw me. Apparently, Kane looks similar. You jumped to the conclusion."
"The fact you beat the living whatever out of some random lowlife and threw his body in the pig's well might have had something to do with that."
Reacher shrugged. The woman thought for a moment. "Now I get it. You're looking for Kane, too. Are you a PI?" "Yes, I'm looking for him. No, I'm not a PI. My name's Reacher." He held out his hand. "Jenny Knight." She gave his hand a firm shake.
"So, why are you looking for him?"
"I'll come to that. But first, we have two problems."
"Only two? My luck must be improving."
"We can't go after him separately. There's too much chance of tripping each other up. Do that at a vital moment, one of us might not live to tell the tale.
True.
So what do you suggest? Kane is only of peripheral interest to me. It's his boss and the rest of his crew I really want. Let me handle this. Stay out of my way. And I'll give Kane to you when I close their operation down.
Knight frowned. I'll think about that. What else?
You were a cop.
What makes you think that?
The phone call from the clerk in the middle of the night. You put her up to that?
What if I did?
That's a classic cop trick. You thought Kane was in my room. He has a history of violence. You were trying to make him bolt, run to a vehicle, flee on foot, whatever. You just wanted him out in the open to gain the element of surprise and reduce the risk to yourself because you have no one backing you up. You're too young to be retired. You don't seem like a quitter. You don't have a line of duty disability, which means you were fired.
You're wrong.
Am I?
Absolutely.
Because I wasn't fired. I'm on suspension. I'm a detective out of Phoenix, Arizona.
You're on suspension because of Kane?
Knight nodded.
My father was a cop. He was retired from the job and working security at a private gallery in Tempe. One night it got hit. He took a bullet in the chest, got taken to the emergency room unconscious. He came around for 2 minutes a couple of hours before he died. I was there. He told me Kane was the shooter. He recognized him from his time on the job. Kane has a jacket 2 inches thick, but nothing has ever stuck. Another detective caught the case, but Kane disappeared off the map, just vanished. The detective tried to get the feds involved, but they blew hot, then cold. In the end, they wanted nothing to do with it, so I ran with the case myself. Evenings, weekends, every spare minute I could find. My LT didn't like it. He said it was a conflict of interest, a distraction from other investigations. He told me to stop. I didn't. And here I am.
I can't blame you. So, what will you do when you find Kane?
I expect you want me to say something banal, like, make sure justice is done, or promise to turn him over to the local cops unharmed. But you know what? I can't do that. What I'm going to do when I get my hands on the miserable son of a bitch is make sure he knows who I am, then shoot him in the gut and watch him die. Slowly. And in agony. That's the truth. But you're probably horrified now. In which case, so be it.
I'm not judging. Reacher thought about his own response when someone murdered his brother. He was many things, but he wasn't a hypocrite. He said, it's something else.
Such as?
What if I told you that the FBI could be investigating Kane after all, and they maybe lost a guy along the way?
Knight leaned forward. What makes you think that?
I'll explain in a minute. But until I know if it's true, I'm not going to do anything that could spook these guys. I'm hoping that as a cop, you'll respect that. Agree to do the same.
Knight took a moment.
Why should I trust you? You know a lot about cop tricks. Maybe a few have been used on you?
Reacher shook his head.
Not used on me, used by me. You're a cop.
I don't believe it.
Was. A military cop for 13 years.
Get out of town. Where were you based?
Pretty much everywhere in the world the Army has a presence.
What rank?
Terminal at Major.
Okay, then.
Knight nodded like she was acknowledging some kind of kinship. So how are you going to find out if the FBI thing is true?
I know a guy at the Bureau. He's looking into it. I should hear pretty soon.
That's good.
But I'm not going to do nothing while you sit around waiting for an email from this buddy of yours, assuming you can even trust what he says, assuming he won't change his tune in 10 minutes' time.
We can trust him. He won't be emailing, and I won't be sitting around.
Then what will you be doing?
learning more about Kane and whoever he's in bed with, making sure they don't hurt anyone, making sure none of them vanish. Then if the FBI thing turns out to be bogus, I'll close them down.
I can get behind that. On one condition.
Go on. I'm not going to wait on the sidelines while you do the heavy lifting. We'll do it together.
No.
Yes. Look at you. Your arm is in a cast. That makes no difference.
Of course it does.
Listen. Finding Kane? I want to succeed. I have more skin in the game than you, I'm sure. But I'm not too proud to say I stand a better chance if I work with a partner. I'm hoping that as a former military cop, you'll respect that and admit you're in the same boat.
Chapter 14.
Vidic ran the numbers in his head over and over. How long to get to the breakfast place, to stand in line, to place the order, for the food to come out, to pay, to drive back. And every time he came up with the same conclusion. Paris was taking far too long. Every time he reached that conclusion, his mind set out in a different direction. First, he got worried. He pictured Paris's Land Rover fishtailing into one of the switchbacks, rolling, her neck breaking as she slammed against the windshield, just like Gibson's had. Then he got anxious. He imagined her speeding, or driving erratically, getting pulled over, giving herself away somehow, and getting arrested. He ran through one possibility after another until he was left with nothing but raw fear. In that final scenario, he saw her running, like Bowery must have done. But in Paris's case, the consequences were different. They weren't irritating or inconvenient. They were catastrophic. Because she had a copy of the report. She could put it on the market, undercut his price, be more convincing when the questions started coming in about how the report had been obtained, and be more credible when it came to establishing its provenance. The car horn honked outside the cave's entrance, 4 times. One long beep, 2 short, another long. Vidic silently thanked God, then set down the crate he had been carrying and said loudly, "That'll be Paris. She'll need help bringing in the food. I'll go." Paris was standing at the side of the Land Rover when Vidic reached her. The rear door was open and she was trying to stack 4 cardboard carryout boxes into a manageable pile in the footwell. Vidic said, "What the hell happened? You were gone so long. Are you okay?" Paris stepped closer to him and lowered her voice to a whisper. She said, "I went to the house."
"Why on earth? What's so important? Fletcher was right. You can get new books. Soon you'll be able to get anything you want."
"I didn't go for my books. I went for my ledger."
"You didn't already have it?"
"Obviously not, or I wouldn't have had to go back for it."
"I told you to Ivan.
Is this really the time?" Vidic was silent for a moment, then said, "So, did you get it?"
"No, I didn't go inside.
Fletcher was right, but not about replacing stuff. The house is being watched."
Reacher ordered coffee and a full stack of pancakes with bacon on the side. Knight asked for Earl Grey tea, hot, with milk. The waitress headed for the kitchen, and Knight dropped a 20 on the table. She said, "In case something happens, I don't want to skip out on the bill if we have to leave in a hurry." Reacher nodded. Knight walked Reacher through everything she had done since the FBI passed on her father's case. She had run computer searches on all of Kane's known aliases, posted bolos for him, and the truck and the motorcycle that were registered in his name, requested an alert on his passport, set flags for any activity on his credit cards, initiated traces on his phone numbers and email addresses. None of those actions bore fruit, so she broadened her net, started looking at his known associates, interviewed the ones who were in jail, and watched the guys who were still on the loose. When four of the five names at the top of that list all suddenly packed up and left town together and made for the same location, she figured she'd hit pay dirt. That location was the motel by the highway, which wasn't promising in itself. The place felt like a staging point, not a final destination. But she had to believe that Kane was close by. She could see no other reasonable explanation. Reacher had a shorter story to tell. He began with how he had woken up handcuffed to a table and ended with details of the deal he had struck with Vidich. Knight drummed her fingers on the table. Am I getting this straight? If you're able to move the safe, and if Vidich is able to break into it, and he keeps his word, he's going to tell you where Kane will be at 4 a.m. tomorrow? What kind of deal is that? Kane, Fletcher, and Paris, the other surviving members of their crew, that's the deal, yes, but you're missing the point. So what is the point? The million in cash? No. The point was to make sure that all four of them are still here. I could have put Vidich on ice easily, Fletcher too, but what about the others? I had no idea where they were or how many I was looking for. By the time I tracked them down, at least one was bound to have heard that his buddies were MIA. Maybe both would have. Then they'd have disappeared, too. They're all as nervous as a cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Kane is only still in play because I made that deal. Knight leaned back in her chair. She said, fair point. So what's your plan from here? Reacher said, I told you. And it hasn't changed. So, do you? The waitress hurried back to their table, but instead of a tray of food, she was carrying a cordless phone. She said, are you Mr. Reacher? Just Reacher. Sorry to interrupt, but the guy on the phone described you. He was very insistent that I ask. The waitress held out the handset. Reacher took it, and she discreetly walked away. He said, Reacher, this is Walwork. How did you know I was here? Knight got out of her seat and moved next to Reacher, close enough to hear both sides of his conversation. He whispered, my FBI guy. Walwork said, I didn't know, but you weren't picking up in your room. I got the address from the number you left, Googled the place, saw there was a diner next door. Diners have coffee. It didn't take long to figure out. Anyway, I talked to my friend, and she said her nephew has been on vacation in your area recently. She hasn't spoken to him for a while. He does a lot of cave exploration, and there's not much signal underground, apparently. But she did mention she's planning to come down there with the extended family for some kind of a reunion. They should arrive by dinner time. I thought I should let you know, because if they recognize you and start talking, you could be detained for quite a while. Reacher said, good to know. Thanks. I don't fancy dinner, but you could tell your friend there's a breakfast place in the neighborhood that does interesting specials. I'll call you back with the address. Tell her it's so popular it opens crazy early, like at 4 a.m., which is extreme, but the dishes on offer should make it worth the effort. Reacher ended the call and set the phone down on the table. Knight remained standing. She said, what's with the weird code? Reacher said, we could talk freely before. I was just reporting a rumor I'd heard. But now we're further down the line. He's worried about increased security. If an agent's cover was blown, they'll have to worry about a leak. Did he mean what I think he meant? The dead guy really was an agent. Reacher nodded. Wow. I wasn't expecting that. From what you told me, I thought Vidich was bullshitting all day long. I've got to admit, I'm surprised too. So the cavalry is coming. It is. And that means leaving Kane to the feds. Are you okay with that? Knight shrugged. If I get to see him taken away in cuffs, I'll be happy.
But if they blow cold again and turn their backs on him, I'm not going to stand still and let him get away.
That's fair. What about you? The cavalry's not due till this evening. Vidic is coming at 2 p.m. So I go with him. Taking care of the safe won't take long.
You think he'll stick to the deal? I can see you shoving the safe, manhandling it around and getting it where he wants it. You'll be tired and out of breath, and he'll have a choice. Give you $1 million or put a bullet in your head. I'm betting he'd prefer the latter.
And you get that he's essentially been profiling you, right? He thinks you're a drifter, which means no friends, no family, no bills to go unpaid if you disappear, no mail to pile up, no one to raise the alarm if you don't call or email or show up somewhere. To him, you're totally disposable. You're the perfect patsy.
I get that. But if I'm not here when Vidic shows up, he'll split. If he thinks he's getting the money, there's a chance he'll give up the address for the others. Then I'll put him on ice. If he tries to double-cross me, I'll make him give up the address. Either way, we get what we need.
I don't like it. You'll be too exposed.
Reacher shrugged. Have you got a better idea?
No.
Knight was silent for a moment, then broke eye contact. Say you're successful with Vidic. What happens to the money from the safe? This isn't about...
Knight put one hand on Reacher's shoulder and pointed through the window with the other.
Look, Kane's guys are leaving. They're carrying their bags. They might not be coming back. Come on, let's see where they go. We might not need Vidic in the safe.
Reacher shook his head. Bad idea. A single car tail on roads like these, they'll make us inside of a mile.
I won't get close enough to get made. I don't need to. They have two cars. I hit an air tag in both of them. That's how I tracked them all the way here.
What's an air tag?
What kind of rock do you live under? It's a location device, originally made for people to stick on keychains and in wallets and luggage in case they got lost. Pet owners attach them to dog collars in case their furry buddies stray, and wives slip them in husbands' pockets for the same reason.
What's the range?
Pretty much worldwide.
Okay. We'll see where they go. But first, let's take a look in Kane's guy's rooms.
Chapter 15. Kane was the first to finish breakfast. He wolfed down his burrito, scrunched up the wrapper, and tossed it on the ground. Fletcher took a little longer to get through his food. Vidic fussed with his pastry and dropped half of it on the floor. Paris stirred her yogurt around for a while and toyed with a couple of chunks of strawberry, then snapped her plastic spoon in two and shoved the pieces into the pot. Vidic got to his feet and started to collect everyone's trash. When he reached Paris, he said, "Get the door for me." Kane sneered at him and said, "Why bother? Leave it. Who cares if rats come in now? Or more rats?"
Vidic glared back.
"Maybe this whole thing with the feds will be a false alarm. Maybe we'll need this place again. And anyway, don't tell me what to do."
Paris held the door, then Vidic led the way to the back of his jeep. She opened the tailgate for him. He dropped the trash onto the load bed floor, checked that no one had followed them outside, and said, "I've been thinking about the house. Are you sure someone was watching it?"
Paris said, "Certain. Why?"
Vidic shrugged.
"The timing seems off. It's too soon for the feds. And I can't see who else it could be."
"Too soon? How?"
"If they have an agent missing."
"Think about it.
Gibson died yesterday. He could only have missed one contact maximum. There could be all kinds of reasons for going dark like that. The feds wouldn't send backup immediately. What if Gibson changed his routine because he thought Fletcher was onto him? He could be lying low deliberately. And if Fletcher was already suspicious and then spotted a bunch of strangers running surveillance, that could blow Gibson's cover.
There must be some kind of emergency procedure they would go to. Alternative contact arrangements to try. No one would show up
physically for a couple of days, surely. I guess. Don't ask me. How would I know? All I know is that the house was being watched.
How many people were watching it? I didn't see any people. What kind of vehicle were they using? Or was there more than one?
I didn't see a vehicle.
I don't understand. If you didn't see any people, and you didn't see any vehicles, how can you be certain anyone was watching?
I could feel it.
Are you serious? That's all you have. A feeling.
Don't question me. I know what I felt. Someone was watching. It's a fact.
Vidich couldn't keep a smile from spreading across his face.
If you say so. Don't laugh at me. This is serious. What if they do more than watch? What if they break in? Find the ledger.
The ledger's hidden, right?
Right.
And you wrote it in code.
I did.
So if somebody broke in, they wouldn't find it. And even if they did find it, they couldn't read it.
I guess.
And by the end of the afternoon, Fletcher's going to burn the place down, right? So, I'm probably worrying over nothing.
Vidich looked away.
The house was going to burn. That was for sure. Only the fire wasn't going to be set by Fletcher. He said,
"You are worrying over nothing. And there's something more important than the ledger anyway. The phosphorus. Did you get it?"
Paris covered her mouth with her hand.
"Oh my God, I totally forgot.
I did get it, yes.
But I left it at the house too."
"Whereabouts?"
"In its container. It's full of water. I checked.
But the container is glass, so I left the thing in its crate full of sand to make sure it didn't break."
"Where's the crate?"
"In the closet in my bathroom, under a bunch of towels."
Vidich smiled.
"Excellent. Then we have no problem at all. Trust me. By the end of the afternoon, we'll be free and clear. And we won't be leaving empty-handed. We're taking Fletcher's 2 mil.
Knight finessed a passkey from the guy who had replaced Mary behind the motel reception counter, then set off toward the door to room 18. Reacher caught up and easily kept pace beside her. He said, "These guys are Kane's known associates, right? So you must have pulled their jackets."
Knight nodded. "All four are ex-military, infantry, dishonorably discharged."
"Together?"
"Two were, the other two separately."
"And they haven't learned the error of their ways?"
"They have not. They've become what I call secondary players. They don't initiate anything. Their specialty is providing muscle or backup for anyone who needs it, and can pay for it. Typically, they get involved in raids on high-value targets, kidnapping, extortion, things like that."
"Is Kane ex-military?"
"No. He crossed paths with one of the guys in jail, kept in touch on the outside. Then, the one introduced Kane to the others. They worked together a half dozen times, we think, but nothing could ever be proved."
They stopped talking when they were 10 feet from the room. Reacher checked the parking lot and the surrounding area. No one was watching. No one was sitting in any of the nearby vehicles, so he stepped to the handle side of the door. He took the Glock from his waistband and nodded to Knight. She held the key card to the lock, pressed down on the handle, pushed the door, and spun away to the opposite side. They waited. No shots were fired. No one emerged. No one shouted a challenge. Reacher stepped inside. The Glock was raised in his left hand. He checked that the room was unoccupied, then moved on to the bathroom. A moment later, Reacher called, "Clear." Knight joined him and took her time to look around. The decor was just like Reacher's room, but this one had a pair of queen beds in place of a king. She said, "There's nothing left behind. Not even any trash. The place hardly looks used. The beds are even made."
"Old habits," Reacher said, then handed her a towel he had picked up in the bathroom. "In more ways than one."
Knight saw it had a row of black stains across the center.
She sniffed it, and immediately her nose wrinkled. Hoppies number 9. They spent their evening cleaning their weapons, and now they're back in King's play. Great.
Want to stand down? Leave this to the feds?
Hell no. We'll just need to take extra care.
Their search of room 19 yielded no further information, so Knight led the way to the parking lot. She stopped next to a silver sedan, a Toyota Avalon, several generations past current. It was in a space at the end of the front row. She had chosen a good location, Reacher thought. The spot gave her a good view of the motel as well as a clear shot for both of the exits to the highway. He was less sure about the vehicle. It looked ancient. There was a dent in pretty much every body panel. The wheels were all scuffed around the rims. Part of the lip beneath the radiator grill was hanging loose, and there was a foot-long gash in the back of the rear seat, like a knife fight had recently broken out in there. Knight caught the way Reacher was looking at her car. She said, "Meet Trevor. He might not be pretty, but he'll run forever." Reacher said, "Looks like he already has." Knight unlocked the doors with her key because the remote wasn't working, then opened the trunk. There were 4 plastic tubs inside, with lids. She moved one aside. It was labeled Plastic Cups. A metal lockbox was behind it, bolted to the frame of the car. She said, "Feel free to use it." Reacher handed her the SIG. She squared it away. He fished the bullets he'd taken from her in his room and handed them back. She dropped them into her purse, slammed the trunk lid, and moved around to the driver's door. Reacher climbed in on the passenger's side. He was pleasantly surprised by how much space he had. Knight fired up the engine, then slotted her phone into a holder that was hooked onto an air vent. She fiddled with its screen for a moment, and a map appeared with 2 dots superimposed on it. They were close together over a road and moving steadily toward the top of the screen. There they are. Knight shifted into drive and eased the car forward. Let's see where they go. Reacher settled back in his seat. He wondered what the odds of the car's ancient radio being able to pick up a good blues channel were. Not great, he figured. Which was a shame. He could have used a little John Primer or Junior Wells right around then.
Chapter 16. Knight was silent for the first half mile, then said, "There's something I don't understand. I get that you were in an accident. Gibson was driving, and he got killed. But how did you wind up in his car in the first place?" Reacher said, "I can't be sure. It's one of the things I don't remember. According to Vidic, it came from some random encounter. He says he saw me help Gibson out of a bind with some assholes who were trying to steal his car. Apparently, he gave me a ride as a thank you."
Okay, back up. First, why did you accept a ride with the guy? Had your car broken down or something?
I don't have a car.
You don't?
So, how do you get around?
I take the bus, or I hitch rides. Although that's getting harder these days.
You were an army major, and now you have to hitch rides? What happened? If that's not too personal.
It's fine. And I don't have to hitch rides. I choose to.
You choose to?
Why?
Because I don't want to stay in one place, and I don't want to own a car.
Weird. But okay. You do know how to drive, though, right?
I did the training back in the day.
All right.
It sounds like maybe you wanted a ride. But why would Gibson offer you one? I get that you did him a favor, but I can't see an agent doing that.
It seems odd to me, too.
How long had Gibson been working this case?
I don't have a date. Why?
Maybe he was undercover too long. He could have been getting sloppy. Or maybe he knew that Vidic had seen what happened with the assholes in the parking lot. Felt like it would look wrong if he didn't do something for you in return for helping him.
Possible, I guess.
Or maybe he was going off the rails.
trying to deliberately screw up so he'd get pulled out. He could have just asked, of course, but a lot of people don't like to admit defeat, especially men. We'll never know, unless some other witness comes out of the woodwork, or my memory comes back. Reacher closed his eyes, but it didn't help. He still felt like he was staring into a darkened room when he tried to remember the wreck. Knight's driving was smooth and efficient, fast on the straights, easy through the bends. No grumbling from the transmission or squealing from the tires. The morning sun was softening the faded blacktop with the shadows of leaves and branches, and the gentle breeze was making them sway and dance. Reacher settled back in his seat. He was enjoying the view and playing a little music in his head. Then he noticed that an arrow had appeared on the phone screen. It was below the two dots, but getting closer. Knight pointed to it and said, "That's us. We'll..." The turn into the first of the switchbacks near where Gibson had crashed was tighter than Knight had expected. The back of the car twitched. Reacher closed his eyes. Knight lifted off the gas and corrected her line with a neat flick of the steering wheel. Then she said, "I'm so sorry. I should have seen that coming. I didn't cause some kind of flashback, did I?" Reacher opened his eyes. He felt like the first shaft of light had penetrated the darkness. He said, "Don't apologize. That made me remember something. Just a fragment. When Gibson approached that bend, he looked in his mirror. He said something like, 'How did he catch up so quick?' Then he hit the gas. Too hard, I guess. Reacher, that's great. Anything else?" Reacher closed his eyes for another moment. "No, nothing more yet. It will come. This is just the beginning. I have faith. Meantime, who do you think Gibson saw in his mirror? Vidich? Seems likely. Vidich was at the crash scene, we know that. He says he was following Gibson and saw what happened. There's no reason to think he's lying." "Okay. Then why did Gibson try to lose Vidich? What scared him so badly he wound up wrecking his car and killing himself?" "Some of Vidich's story is true. Maybe all of it is. Perhaps he did see Gibson meet his handler at the motel. Maybe Gibson knew that. He could have been desperate to get to Fletcher first, to lay down some kind of preemptive defense." "What kind of defense, though? It would be an if you're explaining your losing situation all day long. Not convincing. Not worth dying for. It had to be more urgent. Maybe he thought Vidich was going to kill him, shoot him, or run him off the road. He might have been trying to escape." "Possible. Gibson's Lincoln was black, and I saw flakes of black paint on the bull bar on Vidich's Jeep. Could be something. Could be nothing. The FBI evidence guys will get samples. Their lab will figure it out." Soon after Fletcher got his operation up and running at the cave, he arranged to have a porta-potty installed, just out of sight of the entrance. Everyone in the crew used it, reluctantly in the warm weather, except Kane. He preferred to go behind one of the heaps of rocks, and not all the way behind if Paris was nearby. She knew what he was thinking when he smirked at her, slid a crate into the back of the van, and continued out into the fresh air. She hurried away from the entrance, deeper into the cave. Then she saw Fletcher heading outside too, with his phone in his hand. Paris grabbed Vidich by the arm and pulled him close. She said, "Quick, we only have a minute. What do you mean we're taking Fletcher's 2 million? Are you crazy?" Vidich glanced toward the entrance. "I have it all figured out. It's perfect. The cash will buy us time. Take the pressure off selling the report if there's any problem getting the gold lined up. The alternative is to take something from the Russians, and I don't want to do that. I don't want those mad vindictive bastards on our asses for the rest of our lives. It's better if they think Fletcher and Kane were the only ones involved."
"Right. But how? We can't move the safe, and Kane's not going to do it for us.
the stranger's going to. He's big enough, I hope. How will you get him here? What's in it for him? He's on some kind of crazy revenge kick. I promised that if he helps me with the safe, I'll give up Fletcher and Kane in return. All he wants is Fletcher and Kane? He doesn't want any money. Well, yes, he thinks he's getting half, but that's not going to happen. How? Go quick. Kane's coming back.
Night went easier on the gas after the scare at the switchback. The arrow on the phone screen slowed so that it only just kept pace with the two dots. Night made no further attempt to draw attention to it. She glanced across at Reacher a couple of times, then said, "No more recollections." Reacher shook his head. "You can't rush these things, I guess. How about your long-term memory?" "It's fine." "Good. So, for example, you could tell me your address." "Actually, no." "Oh, that's not so good." "It's not a problem. I don't have an address."
"You must have an address. Everybody has one."
"Not me."
"How come? Are you in the middle of moving? Lease ran out, haven't found a suitable alternative?"
"I don't rent a place."
"So, you sold your old house and haven't moved into the new one yet?"
"I didn't have a house to sell."
"Then what happened? Was it the market crash in 08? Interest rates going up? That crazy inflation we had after COVID? Sorry, I don't mean to be intrusive, but I'm a detective. It comes with the territory."
"No problem."
"So,
I did have a house once. Briefly. But I got rid of it."
"Why?"
"It confirmed something I had suspected for a while. You don't own a house. A house owns you."
"That's ridiculous."
"Is it? Where do you live?"
"Scottsdale, Arizona. Nice little condo. It's on the 13th floor, so I got it cheap."
"Have you been there long?"
10 years, give or take.
"Ever fancied a change?"
"I've thought about it."
"What stopped you?"
"I see where you're going. Getting it ready for the market, finding an agent, viewings, negotiating, finding a new place. It's a lot. But at the end of the day, a person needs a place to call home."
"Not me. I spent 13 years going where the army told me. Now I go wherever I want, whenever I want."
"I get that. I think.
But what about your stuff? Where do you keep it?"
"In my pocket."
"I'm serious. Your clothes, for example, shoes, your TV, books."
"I'm wearing my clothes and my shoes. I don't often watch TV. And when I finish a book, if it was any good, I leave it on a bus or in a motel room so someone else can read it."
"Wait, rewind. You must have more than one set of clothes."
"Why?"
"How do you wash them? What do you wear while they're in the laundry?"
"I don't wash them. I wear them for a couple of days, then get new ones."
"That's crazy."
"Is it? Because I'd say owning a building and buying a machine and hooking up electricity and water and paying taxes and getting insurance and being tied to one place, that's crazy."
Night pointed to her phone. "Look, one of the dots had stopped. The other was still going. Is that its destination, I wonder? Let's see if it moves again." Reacher pointed to a driveway they were about to pass. "That's where they took me after the accident." Night slowed down. The driveway was empty and there were no vehicles parked on the road. She said, "No one there, I guess. Let's continue. Stick with Kane's guys."
Reacher kept an eye on Knight's phone, and when they were close to the stationary dot, he tipped his seat back as far as it would go and hunkered down.
Knight continued, smooth and steady. A minute later, she said, "We're clear." Reacher raised the seat. "What did you see?"
The car was positioned with a good view of the front of the house. A large place, fancy. Half-timbered, like it was trying to look European. Only the driver was visible. They're running surveillance. The passenger will be watching the rear. That would be my guess, too. Vidic said Fletcher wanted the extra muscle because he was worried that Bowery sold him out. The missing guy. This must be the target. They're thorough. The job's scheduled for 4 a.m. Could you find out who owns the place? Possibly. I'd have to call in a favor or two, given that I'm persona non grata right now. It would take a while. And assuming something fishy is going on, I doubt we'd learn much. Just the name of some shell corporation out of the Cayman Islands or somewhere. That would be my bet. The waitress at the diner told me a couple of these places got bought by Russians in early 21. What are the odds this is one of them? Knight pulled over to the side of the road. She pointed to her phone. The other car is stopped, too. She did something to the screen that caused the map to zoom in. The outline of a building appeared next to the stationary dot. Is that shape accurate? Pretty much, I think. It's another house. Another surveillance job? Let's find out. Reacher tipped his seat back again when they were near the second car and straightened up when Knight gave him the all clear. She said, carbon copy. They're watching both places, no doubt about it. The question is, why? Are they going to hit both? Or is it an either-or situation? Maybe they'll make a late decision depending on what the watchers report? Reacher said, or maybe it's neither. Fletcher wanted to avoid getting hit. I assumed that meant he wanted backup at the target location, which works if the origin of the threat is unknown. But what if the Russians, the owners of these properties, are connected? Offense is the best defense. These guys' job could be to make sure they don't make it to the target at all. How can we confirm that? There's no point hanging around watching the watchers. They won't give anything away. And it's not like Fletcher or Kane will show up and talk to them. Anything develops, they'll call them on the phone. So, what do we do? Go back to Fletcher's house. He had a bad day yesterday. Maybe he didn't square everything away properly. How will we get in? If they figure out someone's been messing with the locks, they'll run for sure. Not a problem. Reacher pulled a set of keys out of his pocket. We can use these. They're Fletcher's. He lost them. Lost them? Reacher shrugged. Knight said, he must know they're missing. What if they changed the locks? Then we think of something else. But for that to happen, Fletcher would have to admit to his people how badly he screwed up. Does that sound like the way a boss would behave? Chapter 17. There were still no vehicles parked outside the house. Knight pulled into the wide gravel driveway and turned the car around so that it was facing the exit. Reacher took a moment to study the windows. He was looking for telltale silhouettes or anything that was moving. He saw nothing that worried him, so he approached the door. Fletcher's keys still worked the lock. He stepped into the octagonal hallway. Knight followed him. She moved to the bottom of the staircase and turned around 360 degrees. Knight said, "What a place. You don't see it and think about settling down? Just for a second. Imagine living somewhere like this." Reacher said, "I'd rather sleep in a ditch." "Suit yourself. Start upstairs?" "No, in here." Reacher led the way to the small room with the security camera set up. The computer monitor was back to showing 12 live images. Knight's Toyota was clearly visible at the top left. Reacher took hold of the mouse and managed to move the pointer, but he struggled to click in the right place. He was working left-handed, and his fingers were too big for the buttons. Knight elbowed him in the ribs. "Move, let me do it." She used the mouse to select the driveway view and the password box popped up. She said, "Problem." Reacher closed his eyes. His vision had still been blurred when he'd watched Vidich use the system, and his head had been hurting. He set those echoes aside and tried to focus. He concentrated on the keys Vidich had pressed, remembered there were 16, worked on recalling them one by one. He said, "Not a problem," and recited four letters. Knight tapped on the keyboard. He gave her 8 numbers and 4 more letters. Then the screen filled with tiny pictures. Knight said, "Now what?" "You can do something with the mouse. A trash can will appear. Put the most recent record in it." Knight figured it out. Then Reacher told her how to put the camera into privacy mode. She selected a 60-minute window. "Long enough?" Reacher nodded, then said, "Now do that for all the other cameras. They record inside the house as well when no one is home." Knight started pointing and clicking with the mouse. She said, "No problem." Then, "Wait, look at this." She had worked through the views of the front and rear of the house, and now another exterior image was filling the screen. It was coming from a camera mounted somewhere high up, looking down. It showed the roof of a panel van. It was parked on a rough, stony surface. It was facing away from the lens, and its rear doors were open. A man appeared behind it. He was carrying a box the size of a tea chest.